Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance.
So we do get questions that come in to us. Either people phone in or they send us an email. Either way is fine. If you want to email us questions during the week, it's help@irradio.com. And if you don't get our weekly email, which normally goes out on Mondays, use that same email address, help@irradio.com. Put week in review or WIR in the subject line. We need your first and last name in order to put you into constant contact. That's essential. So if for some reason you decide to unsubscribe, it's a one-click process and you come out and it's just automatic. And if we don't know who you are, that doesn't work. So help@irradio.com. for questions or to subscribe to the Week in Review if you're not already on it. We just recently did a report on how many people opened this up, and it surprised our marketing consultant how many of you read this. I mean, he was really shocked to see how many people take the time to open it up and actually spend some time reading it. So we were glad to see the data. That means that we're sending you information that is relevant and interesting. Hopefully, occasionally it can be a little humorous or have a little edgy comment that we add from time to time. Anyway, one of the questions which is on people's mind, given the last month of rally in the stock market, is the bear dead? Uh-huh. Well, we don't know yet. So
the truth. Yeah, we don't know yet.
there are some definitions that are largely accepted by market participants. One is that when the market falls 20% or a stock or an index, then it's a bear market. If it's below the 200-day moving average, it's a bear market. And if it's an index, it's going to be broadly applied to everything associated with it, even though there may be some exceptions within the index itself. But most people today are just index investors. There aren't a lot of stock pickers, even in the financial services industry anymore. The index diversification concept has been so broadly marketed over the last several decades. But along with a bear market, this has nothing to do with you lovers of the feline species. There is what's called a dead cat bounce. Now,
no, we didn't invent that name. It just
we did not. And I've heard various stories about how that came to be, and I think they're all stories. I have no idea, but basically, this is a bear market that has a rally that people get excited about, and they start following it, and all of a sudden, it rolls over and goes to new lows before it rallies again. And so that fake rally that doesn't go to previous highs rolls over and finds new lows. That's the dead cat bounce. And we don't know if that's where we are now. There certainly are some signs raising questions, but the end of the bear market is usually the inverse of what caused one, and that is a 20% rally off the bottom. Well, the NASDAQ has had that, but we aren't quite there with the others. However, the Dow's above the 200-day moving average, so it doesn't have to have a 20% rise to be reclassified as back in a bull market. But it doesn't, it's 30 stocks. That's certainly not enough to say the bad news is over and the bear is dead. 30 stocks pretty, don't
pretty
make
small
a market.
Sample. Yeah, pretty small sample. And it's much more common for in a bear market to have that rally, to have stocks rally back up and then have it roll over and go to new lows. That's much more common than just for it to take off and head back to new highs again. So we've been, you know, very cautious with this rally. But like you said, Don, there's been a lot of metrics in the market saying, hey, this has been a broad advance, a lot of participation, a little low on volume, but so it's not, you know, it's not the textbook, you know, rally, here we go. But at this point, it's really difficult to tell what's going to happen here coming up.
Well, summertime is summertime, and people That's go do too. Other yeah. things, yeah. especially after having been locked up for more than a year. An opportunity to get out and go someplace is pretty appealing. And so stock market trading volume is normally low. And without buyers, the market's not going to go up. The only people who are dominant are sellers, and they're going to take whatever they can get. So a lot of what has happened recently have been hedge funds, which had been betting on even lower prices. Stock prices are rising, and they've been short the market. Means they had borrowed stocks and sold them on the premise that they could buy them at a lower price and pay back the loan with shares. That's a short sale. Well, when the prices rise and they've bet on further drop, they get what's called a short squeeze. And they say, whoops, I'm on the wrong side of this trade. I have to buy and get some shares back in my account so I can pay off the share loan that started the whole thing. So some of this rally, and we don't really know quite how much yet, is really attributed to hedge funds, which are the major shorters in the market, having to cover their bad bets because they're buying to cover this. And in spite of that, the number of short positions by hedge funds is at a record high. So even though they've been having to cover, they're making new bets that this rally does not have legs.
It can't last. Know? Yeah, they're betting on it heading back down.
Ugh. So we've had similar events in prior bear markets. For those of you who are invested in the tech bubble, you waited a long time to get even if you held through it. If you want to talk to us today, the phone line's open at 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. So there were three major rallies through the tech bubble collapse, and the final one didn't happen until March of 2003. So the market topped out in March of 2000. That's a three-year fake out. Yeah, we're down, but it's over. No, we're down more. It's over. No, we're down more again. And that continued until March of 2003. And then it took years to get back to the new high. The great financial collapse, the mortgage debacle with the fake mortgage signatures. That one didn't take as long. That was only about 7 years to get even. But it had four major rallies in the midst of collapsing to the bottom, which I think that also hit in March of 2009 when we finally got the last one out of there. But when we look at these things over time, there are a lot of corrections, which are generally short-lived, and there are fewer bull markets. But when things turn to the positive, they generally last longer. They're more persistent. What we are looking at today is a rally where, over the last four decades, investors have assumed that bad news in the economy is going to be corrected by the Federal Reserve changing policy and giving us a new tank of fuel, if you will, to keep us going. But there is a difference. The last four decades, inflation has been falling few intermittent blips, but it's been a disinflationary environment. And if you read the Fed's minutes, which I'm sure most of us haven't, even I haven't, I've just
not
simply
today,
read
no.
I've read summaries of various parts of it. But even the Fed now is saying they're not sure when inflation's going to end, which means that the normal Fed policy that supports the stock market is not something you should count on today.
But right that, now, the market's not listening.
That's a change in the game.
It's so big, and people aren't paying attention. And, you know, people are buying in and saying, hey, you know what? The market's going up, so, you know, we're going to stay in. We think we're done. And so far, anyway, the Fed has really been very forthcoming in saying, we don't think this is very healthy. We think inflation is much stickier than we thought, and we think we're going to have to keep raising rates. And the market's largely discounting that as having as inflation having any legs, and it's going to roll over. And you've been hearing a lot about the big Fed pivot that's going to come up here, and they're going to start having to cut rates to get the economy started again. But inflation's still here, and I it's hard to see that happening with inflation still at over 8%. See the Fed even think about pivoting at this point doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense.
So we can't answer the question affirmatively, is the bear dead, because we're not sure it is. But when we come back from break, we have six more questions that we will attempt to address.
Well, that's the nature of the market today, isn't it? A lot more questions than answers. It's really tough to find a little clarity out there, but we will endeavor to do that. Would like to remind everyone that we do have our next stock market update on the calendar. It's scheduled for Saturday, September 3rd, 9 o'clock in the morning. If you'd like to get registered for that, go to iriradio.com. That's iriradio.com. Go to the webinar page and give the registration link a click. You're going to get a link back in your email. And on September 3rd, you just click that link and you'll be live online with us. You'll be able to see what we're talking about, see the charts. We always cover what's going on in the economy, what we're thinking about in the market. And then we always have plenty of time to get your questions answered. And we always get a great number of really good questions from the people that log on to the webinar. So again, to register for that, go to iriradio.com. If you'd like to talk to us this morning, give us a call, 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
The minute you walked in the joint, I could see you were a man of distinction, a real big spender.
Well, I'm not so sure about that last part, but certainly the president has been identified as a big spender. Yeah, so I'm trying to get the bump music turned off. So in any event, we do have more spending on the way, which certainly is not a help for inflation. In fact, some of the interviews after the bill was signed were with various Congress people asking, why did you call this the Inflation Reduction Act? We don't see any impact here. Well, and the answer is, well, it will be there. And the way that inflation will be reduced is that 5 years from now, this will begin creating deficit reduction. We'll begin paying off our debt. And when we do that, inflation will come down. So I think we have to say that the big spenders in Washington mislabeled this last bill, because in 5 years...
Hard to believe, isn't it? Hard to believe, yeah.
In 5 years, they will decide we can't afford to pay down the debt. We need that money for some new program to get through the next election. So our expectation is inflation is going to be much higher and much longer than people are currently assuming. And in the last segment, we're talking about what's the end of a bear market. It's a 20% rise or being above the 200-day moving average. And the Dow is. That's the only index that is. But I just looked up on the on our break the number of stocks on the New York Exchange that are above the 200-day moving average. So we can be in a bear market and still have some stocks that are doing well. We're only at 34%. So two-thirds of all the stocks are still below the 200-day moving average. To right. assume the bear market is over, maybe a little overly optimistic. That now, there's signs of rally. That's certainly true. Whether or not it extends, we don't know that. But let's take a look at some of these additional questions which have come in. And one of which, and we kind of touched on this, is the latest CPI report, because in fact we played the Mr. Biden, President Biden, saying that inflation is only zero for the month of July. Yeah, for the month
we're all
of
done.
July. Yeah. So, I mean, there's that hedge in there because inflation is not zero, and when we look at when we look at what's happening with manufacturing and the industrial sector, there's a time lag here, but things don't look well. And particularly if we look overseas into Europe, and you say, well, why that? I mean, the UK hit a 40-year high with their inflation was up over 10%, their CPI. Well, what's that matter? Well, it's because our economies are really tightly tied to one another. Highly correlated is the proper term. So what happens in Europe or in Japan and the United States all have an interplay. So the fact that UK had to make a massive rate hike to try and start dealing with this big jump in inflation, probably going to give the Fed a little pause to think about what they have to do. But we have a caller. Is he online, or you just leave the question?
He's ready to go right now.
Okay, let's go. Is this Kent from Kent?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
Well, that's what I was confused. It was double on the line, and I didn't know if. Anyway, you are on the air with Don and Perry. Thanks for calling. We're glad to have you out there.
Okay. Hey, great. A couple questions. First of all, is that this bill that is going to be or has been signed by the current occupant of the White House, it had to do with, a lot of $1 trillion or whatever it was, the inflation deficit reduction bill. My understanding is that there was a section in there that will be or was approved for signing approval for energy leases, apparently on federal land. Is that true?
That is true. It has a caveat. Are you aware of those?
No, not at all. I just saw that that headline, as it were. What does it really mean?
Well, they are Senator Manchin, in order to get his signature, required that there would be an easing of the restrictions on energy exploration on federal land, because they don't restrict what goes on private. But they have levied additional taxes on the company, well, on energy producers. So while they may say we're going to allow this, the bureaucrats can slow walk approval of the permits, which is what they've been doing for a couple of years anyway. And the new bill also adds additional taxes on top of it. So the real question is, will management actually decide that it's economically worthwhile to spend a few years and a few billion dollars to go put up another drilling rig out in the Caribbean? And my guess is, given the current attitude of the administration towards energy companies, they're not going to bite. So, yes, they put it in there, but it has to be economically worthwhile for, let's say, Chevron or Exxon or BP, which isn't a U.S. company, but for any of them to say, yeah, we'll spend a billion or two here and wait 10 years to get our money back, or 20, you know, that doesn't make any sense.
As opposed to the federal government, they're businessmen, and they had to be accountable to shareholders. And so, yeah, that's a tough decision for them. I can understand that. That's a very interesting explanation, Don. I heard this, and I was a bit joyful, and I thought, oh, yeah, well, it's too good to be true, and I think that's really what you've explained. It truly is it's good in a way, but as you say, the caveats really hurt. The second part of the question relative to that as well is that what do you think that will have – that legislation will have any near-term impact on energy ETFs, for example, or the energy market in general? Let's just say it that way.
The legislation, I think, has a delayed impact. It's going to take some time before we actually see it have a direct impact on the economy. As far as the energy markets are concerned, there are a number of issues which are problematic. One is that we're approaching winter season. And as we know, winter season, people get cold, so they turn on their heaters. 80% of the heat in the New England area comes from heating oil, which is in short supply. In Europe, they use a lot of heating oil, which is in very short supply. They're also short natural gas supply because Russia has reduced flow through the Nord 2 pipeline. They have very low water levels, which have forced the Netherlands, and the Netherlands, I'm not absolutely certain that's the right country, but I know in France, both of those countries have had to cut back nuclear power because they don't have enough water to keep them cool. The Netherlands, because they need the power themselves, they're not selling it to the rest of Europe. And with the reduction in supply coming out of Ukraine and Russia, we've been exporting more product in coal, LNG, and oil to Europe, which means that we haven't been able to build up our surpluses, which normally happen in the summer, while the administration is drawing down the strategic reserves, which normally are replenished in the summer when prices are cheaper. So these issues look to me on a pricing chart like energy is creating some support at this point, potentially for higher prices as we move into the winter months and into next year. We could see a little lower pricing here, but given these supply issues, you look at supply and demand, demand is not going to go away in the winter. So I don't know, you know, I don't know what's going to happen to prices, but both our global and our dynamic portfolios have exposure to energy at the present time.
Okay, all right, very good. That's wonderful explanation. The other question I had was that what are your in your dynamic portfolio? Do you want to comment what the allocations you currently have, roughly? I mean, how much cash and how much this and how much of that in the pie chart?
Well, cash is now about 46%.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Okay.
Now that changes a lot, you know. So you should not use that as investment advice. We're not here to give investment advice.
No.
That's a very tactical portfolio, and the cash balance earlier in the week was below 2. So right now we're at 46, and next week it will be different.
Oh, sure. And I follow your monthly updates as well, so I can see it on there. But I just wonder, in the interim, what was it looking like. So that's very good. Okay, those are my questions, and thank you so much for the insight, and we'll keep listening.
Well, Kent, want to thank you. You make a great caller, and reminds me of what Rush Limbaugh used to say. A great caller is somebody that makes the host look good, and Kent did a great job.
Well, talking about Limbaugh, I'm a seasoned citizen.
Oh, there you go.
Okay, great.
That was one of his lines too, right?
Good job. Yeah, good job.
I miss him. I really miss him.
So do I.
Okay, guys. Yeah. Hey, thanks so much. Take care.
Thanks,
thank you, Kent. Okay. Well, that frees up a line. You want to join us, it's 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770.
And we should go ahead and take a break here, Don. We're right at the
bottom.
Right at the bottom of the hour. Yep.
Okay.
Kent filled a lot of time there, so that was with good stuff, though. That was very good stuff. I'd like to remind everyone, if you'd like to get our Week in Review, which is our weekly email newsletter, just send us an email. Send that to help@iriradio.com. That's help@iriradio.com. Just put Week in Review in the subject line, and we need your first and last name. You'll begin receiving that on Monday. Goes out most Mondays. And it's a real good look at the current financial news running around, and we try our best to make sure you understand the things that are really important, and even more importantly, the things you can safely ignore. Lots of noise out there, and that's a pretty good filter, the Week in Review is. So, if you'd like to get that, send the email to help@iriradio.com. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We will be right back.
I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden along with the sunshine. There's gotta be a little rain sometimes. When you take, you gotta give. So live, let live, let go.
Well, that's exactly what happened this weekend this week in the market. We got a little rain that showed up in the economic news, and we had some problems with what's called resistance in the market. We get up to a certain level and sellers say, yeah, I think that's enough. Let's take some money off the table. And the market settles back down. So we saw that with the S&P 500 when it got right up next to the 200-day moving average, and it just backed off. Took a couple of runs, and then Friday there were no buyers to push it up. So the sellers are the only ones that are left, and that means you get some lower prices. But the question we had before we started talking with Kent was, what about inflation? Is inflation have we whipped inflation now, to go back to Richard Nixon's days with the win button? Whip inflation now. That's right. And if you have one of those, that's probably a collector's item. But when we think of inflation, we have to talk about the Fed and its policies, because the Fed properly responded to the government shutting down the economy. And it wasn't just ours. I mean, they shut them down around the world. We all know that.
Everywhere, sure.
Yep. And that, I mean, what do you do when you're home and you can't go anyplace? Well, you shop online, but you don't have any income. So the government took care of that. They borrowed a ton of money. Well, they really printed it, you know, digital print. They made it up, but they gave it to a whole bunch of people who said, now I'm home. I now have money. I don't have a paycheck, but the government's taking care of that. And the Fed's saying this is going to create a massive disaster if we don't prop up the economy. So they borrowed, they printed a lot of money. And that's all they do. They just print it. They put it back in the economy. And it created a surge in demand in the midst of a shortage, which means prices go up. And even after the recession was over and things began to stabilize, the Fed ignored reality. And they're now admitting to it. Wow.
Hello.
Yeah, the Fed must have heard that.
We got tons of new gear, and apparently the Fed's paying attention. Yeah, to the upgrade.
So the Fed, slow to come to the game, finally started raising rates. And they did so slowly, and then they said, well, that's not enough. And so they did so some more, and then they did so some more. So we went, finally, we got a 75.75% hike in June, and we got another one of those in July. And things looked like maybe they're serious about getting inflation under control. Until in the Q&A session after the last Fed meeting, Mr. Powell said, well, we think we're at neutral. And Mr. Market said, neutral. That means the problem's solved. They're going to quit raising rates and going to go lower. And we got this run up in the market. Now, let's go back and talk about what actually is happening. The Fed actually said in their minutes, if anybody took time to read them, and as I said, I haven't read the whole thing, but I read summaries, that the bulk of the effects of higher rates have yet to be felt. So we're still going to see inflation, is what that means, that lower commodity prices, i.e. oil, has come down significantly from 130 to just below 90 bucks. That does not mean inflation is over. That's the Fed's opinion. They also anticipate more higher rates, which is bad for bonds and bad for stocks. They also see a risk that if investors don't believe the Fed is serious, that's not good. Participants underlined that a decrease in demand, participants being Fed members, that a decrease in demand is essential to lower inflation. And the Fed sees interest rates hikes continuing until inflation eases substantially. Now, how do you get that done? The Fed doesn't control supply. I mean, they don't make any product like, other than money. They don't make anything that you and I are going to go out and buy. They can't control the supply chain coming out of Asia. I mean, none of those things are in their control. The only thing they can do is affect demand. So go back to your Econ 101 class. Supply plus demand generates a price. If there's high supply and no demand, prices collapse. If there's low supply and high demand, prices rise. That's inflationary. If you have the same supply, which the Fed can't control, but you lower demand, then prices fall. And we see that with Walmart and Target and other retail stores who have excess inventory, and people aren't buying the stuff. So what do? They reduce the price. That eventually would cause a drop in inflation. So when we turn around and put this together, same supply, lower demand, generating a lower price, how do you get there? Recession, anyone? They're trying not to have one, but that's the answer.
It's very likely, in fact, historically speaking, that we're going to see a recession, severe or mild, one or the other, because inflation's running still north of 8%. The Fed wants it at 2%. So we're not even close, in the Fed's words, we're not even close to where they think inflation needs to be. And they have said they're dedicated to raising rates until they can see that it's going to get there. Right now, it's going to take way too long. We just went from, just over 9 to 8.5. That's not moving in the right direction. Plus, that can just be a blip. We'll see again when the inflation number comes out again, and we'll see if we have a trend building here or not. And if we don't, that's pretty much locked in then. Like you said, Don, the only thing the Fed can do is keep raising rates until demand collapses. I mean, that's what's happening to the price of gasoline right now. The price is dropping, not because there's suddenly more gas. It finally got too expensive and people started buying less of it. And that's the idea. That's what the Fed is shooting for here, and they're going to get it if they continue to raise rates. And that does mean we're going to have a big slowdown, and that usually means we're going to go into recession before it finds stability again.
So higher prices in the gasoline area created demand destruction. People said, I'm going to drive less. I mean, I do not feel sorry for the people on Fox Business who run those shows. I mean, but when you hear those very well-paid show personalities say, I just spent $100 to fill up my gas tank. You know, it's right. Not that they can't afford it. It's what's going on here. This isn't realistic. And when you think of the average household, I mean, I drive an SUV. So, and I know when I go to fill up the tank, it's over $100. And that's just the way it is. it's uncomfortable. But when you do that and you're used to 40 or 50 not that long ago, that money's coming out of something else in the budget. For a typical family, that's a dinner out for the family. And that's gone away because of the gasoline. So people drive less. That's demand destruction. And that's basically what the Fed needs to achieve. It's really hard to achieve that if the investing community believes the Fed is not going to continue raising rates. They have to do that in order to bring demand down. And they're fighting against things that they can't control. We already mentioned some of those. But one of those, which we've talked about at length in times past, is the housing problem. I mean, housing is almost a third of the CPI. And yet prices haven't collapsed. Demand's weakened a bit with interest mortgage rates, the 30-year rate above 5. That's, you know, people don't qualify as easily. So that there's some softening in some areas, but it's not significant yet. And they use housing on a lag. So it's going to take more than a year of lower house prices on the market before it's going to have a reducing impact on the inflation numbers. So they're fighting a longer term trend. It's going to be a while before this breaks. So that's part of the reason why we take a look at this rally and say this could be just a dead cat bounce.
Pay attention here, right?
Yeah. And there are some, you want to talk about it being a bull market because everybody wants the market to go up. Sure, we want to recover. And there are some signs, but as I said, only 34% of the individual stocks are above the 200-day simple moving average. You need more improvement to avoid a retest of the lows. And if inflation persists or if the Fed comes out this next month and hikes another 75 basis points, I think 0.75%, that's going to really upset both the stock and the bond market. And we would expect to see much, much lower prices. Typically, when you get a dead cat bounce, you go to lower lows than you did before, than you had off the last one. You go back and look at charts, and that's just what happens. So we're not making a forecast. We're just saying historically, this is how these kinds of environments evolve. You get a rainy day forecast from time to time. And then some sunshine comes out.
Yep, it doesn't mean you ignore it. You know, we're investing into this bounce. We're just doing it with our eyes wide open and saying to our clients through our portfolio that we're going to be ready to step aside here. This doesn't mean the green light's on and everything's fine. It's probably not. But at this point, like I said, Don, we don't make the forecast. We're just saying, okay, we're trending up here. It's probably going to be short term, and which means don't go to sleep on this. Pay attention. If you're in the market, watch what's going on, because if it does roll over, like you said, Don, we're probably headed for lower lows. That's no fun. No one likes to see that.
But if we get some positive news and we bounce above and the indexes move up above the 200, well, it's game on for a little bit longer anyway.
We've talked about that. It's like, what's priced in? What's already in the market? And the market was very pessimistic previous to this run-up. So those lows may have been the lowest lows. We can't guarantee that's not true either. It's just a time when you really need to pay attention, really need to watch what's going on, and watch those price levels, see where things are going, and don't fight the line. Don't pretend that the market can't roll over again. It can, and be ready for that.
And theoretically, you want to watch the smart money. And I mean, I found this morning. I was surprised to find out that the hedge funds have $107 billion this week of shorting the S&P 500, betting it will be lower. And I said, wow, these are the guys. They make big bets. And theoretically, they're the smartest guys in the business. And that's not always true, but generally they take big bets, high risk, and they make money off of it. And being short at this point in the market would suggest that there is some additional resistance to a higher high than this last week's attempt. We should probably aren't we past due a break, our last break here?
Last break of the morning here. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have our next stock market update on the calendar for September 3rd, 9 o'clock in the morning. If you'd like to register for that, head to IRIradio.com. That is IRIRadio.com. And on the webinar page, there's a place you can register for that. We are finding people are very happy when they log in. They're getting good information. And like I said earlier, we always have plenty of time to get to any questions that you have. So if you have a question about the market or investing or even an individual security, and you're wondering if something you should add to your portfolio or not, we'd be glad to give you a second opinion on that live. And you can see the charts. You can see why we're thinking what we're thinking. And it's a really good place to get some information on the market and on securities. If you'd like to talk to us this morning, we have plenty of time to get your call on the board. Give us a call, 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Mama said there'll be days like this. There'll be days like this. Mama said.
Mama said. Mama said.
Mama said there'll be days like this. There'll be days like this. Mama
yeah, and Friday was another one of those. When you're looking for a continuation of testing the 200 moving average on the S&P 500, and it doesn't even make an attempt. It just unfolds, and you say, oh, not another one. Let's hope that Monday's not another one. You know, we're all generally optimists. You know, I saw you found this article on Japan, Perry, and I saw the headline, and I thought, oh, you know, Japan's had a demographic problem since post-war. I mean, when they decided they couldn't afford to have an expanding population, they had to rebuild the country. They had a policy of not having kids, and they've never recovered from it. So when I saw this article, Japan's latest alcoholic advice, please drink more, I thought, this is a new approach to improve the demographic makeup and create a little more romance between couples and maybe
lighten
have
up
some,
everybody.
Yeah, lighten up. Well, so then I read it and I thought, that's not what they're doing. They're just after the money.
It's amazing. It's amazing. They're just to let the audience know, Japan is embarking on a program looking for products and processes that will get people, younger people especially, to drink more alcohol. Because the taxes that they get from alcohol consumption are down, and like all governments, instead of saying, well, maybe we should spend less, they're just trying to find a way to restore that income stream of taxes, and that is, well, people have to drink more, and they're not going out as much, so they have to drink more at home. So we're going to work on that. We're going to get everybody boozing up at home here and get those alcohol taxes back where they need to be. It just cracked me up. It's like that governments worldwide, that's always the reaction. Well, let's just get those tax revenues back up. Let's don't change anything else, even if we're trying to get all of our kids to start drinking more. It's like that's still what they're going to do. It's amazing.
Well, it's a serious problem because alcohol revenue has fallen by a third. You lose a third of your revenue from some source. That's a big deal. But you know, here in the United States, we kind of have the same problem. Let's go back, 40, 50 years, and we have this big move against smoking. Don't smoke. It's bad for your health. Okay, that's true. And we know that even more so now. So what people do? They quit smoking.
Quit smoking.
And the government said, our taxes are going away. Well, we can't go out and say smoke more. So we'll just raise the taxes. We're going to tax fewer smokers more heavily so we don't lose revenue. Because as you just said, the one thing that is an absolute anathema to anybody in Congress is to cut spending. They just can't. They cannot can't imagine that, that we're going to do that. And that's
way.
That's part of the premise of this Inflation Reduction Act is we're just if we spend more money, the problem will go away. But we did that. You know, it's the old sin tax deal. Now we don't like sin, but people do. We can tax. We can tax it. If they don't sin enough, we'll tax it more. It's just you reach a point where people do quit. I mean, some people quit smoking because it just got too expensive. And lately they've switched to vaping, whatever. But in any event, let's talk. We're here to talk about the market. So maybe there's some common sense that we can conjure up here before we run out of time. So the primary assumption in the market, which is true, is that stocks generally rise in value over time.
Over time, sure.
The time period is the problem for investors. We, in our lives, I mean, recently, most investors that we talk to have been through three, maybe four bear markets that were significant, and they remember them. 87, the 90 bear market really didn't last all that long. That was the invasion of Iraq. That was quick down, and then it rallied fairly quickly. So this will be a fifth one. And then we have the tech bubble and the great financial collapse. And then we have the we got really close to a bear market in the end of 18, which was in response to the Fed raising rates. And then we have the COVID bear market. And it didn't last long because of massive cooperative intervention from both government and from the Fed. So we had just huge amounts of money. Literally, we were pouring gasoline on the fire to be sure it didn't go out. So when you look at this over the long haul, and that's what the charts are in your stock, in your financial advisor's presentation or the chart on the wall, just look at this. From 1929 or from 1800, look how high the stock market has gone. The assumption is you are going to participate in that. Well, you're never going to live that long. And you're never going to have the money to put in the market back in 1929. And live through bear markets. And there is the catch to markets usually go up because they also go down. And the depth of the retreat, and it varies. Some are significant and some are not. And it's how do we deal with those when we may still need money coming out of there? Well, there are multiple ways to deal with it. The buy and hold, the standard modern portfolio theory, diversify across all sorts of asset classes and just hold your nose, doesn't sound real appealing once you get close to or are in retirement. That's where more tactical management decisions have to come into play. And when you don't have the traditional 40 years of disinflationary economic growth going on, the buy and hold pie chart has a lot of shortcomings.
It really does. It can really cost you, and it's important to understand that time frame. And like you said, Don, that mountain chart that's always on the wall about how stocks always go up, you need to look at a time frame there. What's your investment life? How many years are you going to be able to invest? And, you know, that, of course, is far less than your entire lifetime. You don't have that. It's only when you're an adult and you have enough money that you can put some of it to work in the market. And take a look at the number of drops and what can happen over that much, much shorter time frame. And that's where buy and hold can really hurt you.
And you end up with factors that aren't even traditional market factors that interfere. Which geopolitical stuff, wars, even though it's a regional war, it disrupted supply chains. It's disrupted normal energy access. It's disrupted food supplies to a good portion of the world. All these things have a ripple effect. And the standard advice is just hold your nose. I mean, you'll live long enough. It won't matter. Well, maybe you will and maybe you won't. The way we try to help you understand that is in our monthly webinars. And the next one is on September 3rd at 9 o'clock. It's online. If you haven't registered, there's plenty of time to do so. Go to our website, iriradio.com. That's the shortcut. and in the lower left corner that says webinar, a couple of clicks, your email and your first and last name, and you'll get a registration link. It'll be unique to you. And if you can't attend because you want to sleep in that day, or you've got activities, you know, the grandkids are coming over, that's all, you know, that's fine. We're going to send you a replay link. You can watch it on your own time as often as you want. It's enthralling. Well, it's informative anyway.
That's what we're shooting for anyway. Yeah. Yeah. We're always trying for enthralling. We'll see what we get. Yeah.
Anyway, the email address or the website address to register for September 9th, it's generally it's the first Saturday of the month, unless it's a holiday, then we go to the second. Go to irradio.com. That's irradio.com. Lower left-hand side, it says website or webinar, and you, a couple of clicks, you get registered, you get your own link to join us, either live or remotely on your own time. You want to send us a communication during the week, it's help@irradio.com, or you can call us 800-317-9119, 800-317-9119. We'll be glad to answer your questions directly. We are out of time. God bless you, your family, and God bless the United States of America. Have a great weekend.